wishing you a very pleasant good afternoon, wherever you may be.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello?
2-2, the line shot down the left field line. That ball, it's gone! And the Rays win it! A line drive home run by Evan Longoria.
We're on to Cincinnati.
5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes! Unbelievable!
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sports.
Hello everybody and good afternoon. It is a Sports Access. I am your host, Peter DeFee. It is great to be back. I know in the fall we didn't have anything. I was helping out a buddy of mine with his radio show. Didn't have a whole lot of time to do my radio show, my podcast, but this is season two of the Sports Access. As always, bringing you all the spin on the news that you want to be in pertaining to sports. We have a lot of sports talk to talk about. I know I'm saying sports and talk a lot, but this is season two, so we're going to try to do a couple of different things here, bring in a couple of different segments than we did in season one. But let's get right into it, because we have a lot of news to talk about. First, a couple of surprise retirements. Maybe one surprise, one not surprising. But Luke Kuechly retired earlier this week. The 2013 Defensive Player of the Year, five-time All-Pro, seven-time Pro Bowler, had 1,092 tackles in his career. One of the greatest careers for a linebacker. Played his whole tenure with the Carolina Panthers. Went to the Super Bowl 50 with him in 2015, 2 years removed from winning Defensive Player of the Year. Regarded by many, as you all probably have seen on social media, as being one of the best linebackers they've ever played against. Michael Thomas, teammates like Christian McCaffrey, Greg Olsen, guys like that have come out and said, best of luck to Luke Kuechly. It was a pleasure playing with him. Michael Thomas said it was a pleasure playing against him, along with a couple of other guys like Mark Ingram, who is now with the Baltimore Ravens, which we will talk about in a minute. But also another retirement, which came to a surprise to me because I thought he retired last year, but was Antonio Gates, the all-world tight end, 113 career touchdown receptions by a tight end, the most ever by a tight end. It was a little surprising to me because I thought he had officially retired before this season that just ended for the Chargers. But no, turns out he retired a couple of days ago, so wish him best of luck. We will see him in Canton in 5 years. I think I'm not entirely sure. I know how baseball works. It's after 5 years, but in football it confuses me a little bit because sometimes I think it's 6 years. Sometimes it seems like it's only three or four. But we will undoubtedly see him in Canton with his bust and with the gold jacket and a great career. But now into the more pressing news for baseball, that is the Astros cheating scandal. It came up, in the offseason, more after the World Series that ended in October. So this is about November, December. The Astros were linked in 2017 to a cheating scandal where they were stealing signs, but not by a typical method of stealing signs, which was, looking at the catcher to see if he puts down a one, if he had a signal for one, and then he taps the ground and moves over to the right, that indicated that it was a fastball, and you could pick up on that if you were at second base, or if the catcher was, for some reason, only using one sign as a one. For all novice baseball fans or fans that don't really follow baseball, usually if a catcher puts down a one, it's a fastball. If he puts down a two, it's a curveball. If he puts down a three, we call that other breaking ball, so like a slider, maybe like a slurve, a two-seam cutter type of deal. You could also use that for five if you want to. And then four is usually a changeup. So if a catcher was just being lazy back there and just putting down, you know, one signal. So he put down a one and then moved over to the right. The guy on second base could easily pick that off and just, you know, have some type of signal back to the batter, as in if he touches the top of his helmet, it's a fastball away. If he's, you know, dangling his arm, it's a fastball inside. You know, something very coy to where the batter would know what was happening, but the catcher wouldn't, so he would just keep doing the same thing. But that wasn't the case with the Astros. The Astros were actually looking at the monitors that were inside the dugout. Usually guys will have iPads and whatnot looking at game film. It's usually delayed a little bit, but somehow they got the live feed, even maybe in the tunnel where they walked through, and a lot of videos were showing, you know, they had a trash can in the tunnel, and that's how they thought a lot of people were doing it. So they were looking at the monitors in the tunnel. Before you come out, there's a trash can right there, and every time a catcher put down a 2, 3, or 4, which meant off speed, somebody was banging on the garbage can. It doesn't say who it was in the reports. It just speculates that different players, because when Altuve was up, you could hear it. When Evan Gattis was up, you can hear it. Carlos Correa, Josh Reddick, you name them. They probably were benefited from somebody hitting the garbage can, stealing signs. So that was a big issue that had corresponded with that scandal, and a bunch of punishments were handed down by the MLB. For one, AJ Hinch, Jeff Luhnow were suspended a year. They lost their first and second round picks for not only this year in 2020, but in 2021. So that is four top two draft picks that they lost. And for baseball, your number one picks, and especially your number two picks, are usually the guys that you're going to build your franchise around come 3-4 years down the line. You know, a guy like an Adley Rutschman that the Orioles drafted this last year, number one overall, a Byron Buxton that the Twins drafted number one overall, you know, a David Price, an Evan Longoria, guys like that, Clayton Kershaw, who was a number one pick. Guys like that, your number one, your number two picks are going to be those franchise cornerstones that are going to turn around a franchise, like with the Miami Marlins, or just keep the franchise chugging along for years to come, like the Yankees, like the Red Sox, like the Dodgers. You know, they've gotten a plethora of first and second round picks that have just helped chug that team along, like Kyle Seager, Cody Bellinger, Gavin Lux. You know, you name them, the Dodgers have been able to get him in the first or second rounds of the draft, and use them to help out their teams. So what also happened was that the $5 million fine was handed down to the Astros, which was at the time now, right now, when the punishments were handed out, the MLB max. Now for the Astros, that wasn't enough for Jim Crane. He actually fired AJ Hinch and Jeff Luhnow. Now what was surprising to me was that they actually got fired. I didn't think they would get fired as much as I just thought they were going to sit their suspension out, maybe get a couple more fines handed to the actual manager and GM, because a lot of people also thought that the players were going to get punished for some reason, whether it be being complicit and not telling anybody, or actually banging on the garbage can like a lot of people were saying they did, or whistling, or there was even a report saying that they had an electronic Band-Aid or something on their fingers, which you could see. I just forgot the catcher's name. Where you could see the catcher for the Astros, when he swung, it actually fell off of his hand. And for the life of me, I can't remember his name. It wasn't Evan Gattis. It was the other catcher that actually had a pretty big role. Michael Perez? No, he was on the Rays. Anyways, he had what looked like an electronic Band-Aid that flew off, and then he tried to grab it right away so nobody could see. Now, I don't know if that's really an electronic Band-Aid that was able to help him, you know if it was an off-speed pitch or not, but I can't sit here and say it wasn't. but I also can't sit here and say it was. So they got fired. I want to make sure I say this right, or at least try to. Joe Espada will be named the interim manager for the Astros moving forward into 2020. I'm sure they will try to look at somebody. I just saw a report, too, on Twitter that Buck Showalter, who was the former Orioles as well as the former Blue Jays manager, or excuse me, former Yankees manager, not Blue Jays, but former Orioles and Yankees manager. He was interviewing for the job, so we'll see if he gets that job. But right now, Joe Espada will be the interim manager. But what also came down from the suspension and from the firing of the Astros guys was Alex Cora and the Red Sox mutually parted ways. Alex Cora was the bench coach in 2017, and the Red Sox were also being investigated for sign stealing in 2018 when they won the World Series. So 2017, the Astros win the World Series. They're under investigation for sign stealing. Obviously, the punishments came down to them this last week, last couple of days last week. And then the Red Sox were being investigated for their 2018 sign stealing scandal, where they perhaps did the same thing. And I'm sure a lot of you guys remember it was either 2014 or 2015 where they had the whole Apple Watch scandal. That could have also been their World Series run in 2013, but they had the Apple Watch scandal to where they were using that to steal signs and to contact other people with that. So they removed all Apple Watches from Major League dugouts. So Alex Cora, who won the 2018 World Series with the Red Sox in his first year, decided that he didn't want to be what he said, quote, a distraction. He didn't want to be that to the team. So he decided to just mutually step down. So now they're in the process of trying to find a manager as well. After coming off a third place AL East division, not making the playoffs, and not being able to defend their title, they will now be looking for a manager in a sense of interim. Right now, I'm sure the bench coach there will be there. I'm sure they'll interview, you know, I wouldn't say they're going to interview AJ Hinch afterwards, because right now I think AJ Hinch, Alex Cora are going to have to sit out this year. AJ Hinch after this year will be able to try to get reinstated in the league. I don't know off the top of my head if anybody is going to need a manager next year for retirement, because all the big name guys, unless Dave Roberts' job gets dangled in front of him like it seems like it does every postseason because they don't win the World Series. But now they have a legitimate gripe as to what was happening. You know, everything that happened in the 2017 World Series in Houston, where we were all saying, like, oh my God, it looked like he knew what was coming. Well, he did know what was coming, and that was Altuve, Correa. Now a lot of speculation is going into Altuve's MVP season as well. You know, how much of that was actually Altuve, and how much of that was somebody banging on the garbage can telling him that it was a curveball coming, and him able to just sit back on it. That also brings in the speculation of the Tyler Glasnow game with the Rays in Game 5. Were they actually tipping pitches? Or was Glasnow actually tipping pitches and putting his hands in different spots for the curveball and fastball, which I think he was a couple of times? Or was it they knew what was coming because they looked at the monitor and were banging on the trash can? So a lot of people were not happy with the punishment, as far as they didn't think any players got punished, and they thought the players should have been punished. Maybe you fine everybody $500,000 or something. Something which seems insurmountable, especially because Altuve is about to sign a big contract. Correa has a big contract. Bregman's about to sign a big contract. But maybe some sort of fine, you know, $500,000, that would be about, don't know my math, but that would be about $13.5 million that they would pay, if I'm correct. in my math. I hope I am. But some sort of fine, a lot of people thought would be, it would be 12 and a half. It'd be sufficient for their role in this sign-stealing scandal. But as far as right now, nothing else has come to light. It seems like it's pretty much just dissipated now. Haven't heard anything over the last couple of days as far as Jim Crane's punishment of the owner, because he kind of played the victim here. As he didn't know what was going on. I'm sure he did. Owners are usually down in the locker room talking after postseason wins, after games, you know, after big games. So we'll see what comes to light there. We'll see what also comes with this Red Sox scandal, because I'm sure Alex Cora just stepping down isn't going to mean the end of this. It's not going to be the end of this scandal. Repercussions are still going to come to the Red Sox. They're still going to have to look at, you know, who played a part in this. Now the Mets as well, because Carlos Beltran, who was just named the manager of the Mets this past offseason, they're wavering on his support because of his role in the 2017 season. So there's a lot of things still yet to come out of this sign-stealing scandal. I'm sure if the Red Sox are accused of the same thing, I'm sure they're going to get slapped the same punishment as the Astros. I don't know if they're going to fire their GM as well, because Alex Cora did step down as manager. But a lot of things have still yet to come out of light, come into the light as far as punishments for the Red Sox. And I'm sure we will hear about that these next coming days. But when we come back, a lot of football to talk about. National Championship was this Monday. Great game. Watched every bit of it. About 5 first-round talents playing for both sides in that game that could possibly go in the top 20, as far as I'm concerned, but at least in the first round. 6 if you want to count Trevor Lawrence next year, because he will be the number 1 overall pick next year, regardless of who has it. But then we have to talk about Titans-Ravens and a couple of off-season questions that the NFL has to answer, or us as fans want answers to. So that is coming up after the break. We will be right back on the Sports Axis. We are back. Breaking news that I was able to see during the break, and it states Odell Beckham Jr. arrest warrant issued for slapping officer's butt post LSU win. So I'm sure a lot of people watched the national championship game. They saw LSU win 42-25 over Clemson, and they capped off their 15-0 season. Joe Burrow capped off his amazing senior season for LSU, 60 touchdowns, 65 touchdowns, responsible for. He had 6 touchdowns in the national championship game. But now all the focus has shifted to Odell Beckham. And I want to not have to sit here and talk about Odell Beckham in any other way other than he should be one of the best wide receivers in the league. Skill-wise, he is. But as far as numbers and statistics and being able to stay in games and stay healthy and not do silly stuff like this, it's really hard to do that. The article goes on to read, there's not a whole lot, but there was a video of a Louisiana officer in the locker room. I don't know what he was in the locker room for, but he was talking to a player, and I guess he wanted the player to show him something. I don't know if it was alcohol or anything. I'm not going to speculate too much on that, but it was just he had him show him a drink of some sort. It seemed like the conversation was a little serious. He goes and bends down to pick something up, and Odell Beckham slaps him on the butt as in to say, good game. And it was also repeatedly telling him to get the gat, to the officer, it was, and now he has an arrest warrant out in New Orleans, obviously for his arrest. It's just so hard to day in and day out hear about silly stuff that not only Odell Beckham does, but people with the Browns do. And I think this was a key reason why the Browns under Freddie Kitchens were not able to succeed on the field and not meet expectations. This should have been a playoff team. Last year when they went 7-8-1, I predicted they would go 8-8. They did. If they put Baker Mayfield in week one, they probably go 9-7, 8-8 at the least. So this year I was thinking, you know, you get Odell Beckham Jr. You know, Nick Chubb is stepping into his own. Now, this offense is looking really good, should have looked really good. And as far as, you know, Nick Chubb being the only real offensive presence for this team, you know, they were underwhelming this whole season. They should have made the playoffs. A lot of people projected them to make the playoffs. And now it's going to be an uphill climb because the Steelers are going to get better. They're going to get Big Ben back. Most likely going to have a good draft this year. They have Minka Fitzpatrick now on the defensive side of the ball, which was a big plus for them this season. The Ravens are only going to get better. I'm going to talk about the Ravens and the Titans game here pretty soon and about Lamar Jackson. But Lamar Jackson's the MVP. He's not going away anytime soon. And this offense is going to have another 2 to 3 years, maybe 4 to 5 at the max, before people really start figuring out how to really play defense on them. I'm not going to say that this offensive scheme is going to go away next year because it's going to be hard for them to do. And Lamar Jackson's going to progress in his, you know, throwing capabilities and his quarterback abilities and everything. And this offense is going to get smarter because Harbaugh is, you know, a really good coach. But the Browns seem like they're going to be on the back burner of the AFC North again because Cincinnati Bengals are going to probably have a really good draft with Joe Burrow. And they're going to get a couple of other key pieces in the first three rounds to make sure that they're in somewhat of a good situation next year. They're still going to have A.J. Green come back if he signs. You still have Tyson Ross. So you still have Joe Mixon at the running back. So this is going to be a team that, if they can figure things out on the offensive line, is going to be pretty good offensively. And if, you know, they have a couple of good draft picks come through and develop on the defensive side of the ball, you know, the Browns are going to have to struggle just to be in third place. So hearing about Odell Beckham now with this whole warrant out for his arrest is really, it's getting harder and harder to defend him on the field when he's making such silly mistakes off the field. And I've had this conversation time and time again with other people that Odell Beckham is one of the best talents in the NFL. And right now it's hard to even say that with the numbers that he's put up these last couple of years, the way he asserts himself on and off the field. And I was a big advocate for if Tom Brady did the same thing, we would be praising Tom Brady for having, you know, the guts to stand up to somebody. But Tom Brady knows, and I'm not just saying Tom Brady just because I'm a Patriots fan and Tom Brady is, you know, a quarterback and he's white. I'm talking about that in the sense of guys know, Ray Lewis knew when it was time to turn that switch and get into somebody's you know what and just say, hey, knock it off, let's do it this way, or get in somebody's face and start a screaming match with them because he knew what it took to get him to that place to where they could perform better. And right now it's just hard because the Browns do not have a leader on that team. Jarvis Landry's not the leader of the team. Odell Beckham's not the leader of the team. Baker Mayfield's not the leader of the team. The head coach wasn't even the leader of the team. So hopefully, I don't know how this Kevin Stefanski hire is going to be. He was the offensive coordinator for the Vikings, scored 10 points against the 49ers. Granted, it's the 49ers, and they have a really good defense, and the Vikings were able to score a lot of points and beat the Saints the week prior. But to me, I don't know if that's going to be the right hire. I would have personally went Josh McDaniels, even though we saw what the offense was like. And I would hate to have, you know, watch a Patriots game without Josh McDaniels as the offensive coordinator. But I think he would have been a good hire. I also think the defensive coordinator for the 49ers, whose name escapes me right now, I think he would have been a good pick, especially because on the defensive side of the ball, you got guys like Myles Garrett and Denzel Ward, who should be the cornerstones for your defensive line and your secondary. So somebody that can take a, now granted it's Joey Bosa and Richard Sherman and D Ford and who insert other top player that the 49ers have, but you saw what he was able to do with that 49ers defense this year after going 4-10 in the year prior. So I think they just need somebody who is going to be able to lead that team. You know, maybe Nick Chubb steps up and says, hey, guys, enough's enough. You know, maybe Odell Beckham does change his ways next year and goes, you know what, enough's enough. I'm not going to fight the league about the cleats. I'm not going to fight the league about the watch. I'm not going to fight the league about this, that, or the other. Maybe Baker Mayfield steps up in his maturity and he brings to light what they need to do. But right now, there is just no urgency to find a leader on that team. And that is why the Browns have been the way they have been for the last couple of years. And that's why they'll continue to be like that over the next couple of years, considering all the talent they have on that team. But it's just, it's getting harder and harder to support somebody that isn't willing to mature, basically. But in my opinion, Odell Beckham Jr. should be in the league with DeAndre Hopkins, should be in the league of a Julio Jones, who should be in the league of being talked about just like Randy Moss and Jerry Rice were talked about. But right now he's not. He's known more for his antics off the field than he is known for his amazing play style on the field, and it's sad. But moving on, Titans versus Ravens was this last week. First of all, I'm sure a lot of you guys know, but if you don't, I'm a Patriots fan. So the 14-13 loss, while not surprising that much, was still gut-wrenching because it had been 10 years since the Patriots were in the wild card playoff round where they lost in the first round that year as well, and it had been 10 years since they had been one and out. So I was thinking, you know, beat Tennessee, then go to Kansas City, play close but still ultimately lose. I thought that would have been you can't say storybook ending, but it would have been a better ending to the season than what happened in the Tennessee game, especially since they were shut out in the second half, which, surprising? No, because the offense in the last 8 weeks looked terrible, but it was still gut-wrenching knowing that goal to go with first down, Sony Michel gets stuffed four times and you have to settle for the field goal. That doesn't happen. They get the touchdown. It's 17-14 and we're looking at a different game. But anyways, Derrick Henry, King Henry, all hail him. Probably the best two-game stretch in a postseason ever. 180-plus yards in both games. Absolutely ran wild on the Patriots' best rush defense and on the Ravens' really good rush defense. Don't know where that came from. That's why he's the rushing leader of the NFL this year. That's why he will be making a lot of money when it's his turn to make a big contract. But let's talk about the game. So, first of all, it was very surprising. It was 14-0 at one point, and then it was 21-0 at one point. Final score ended up being 28-12. Score looks a lot closer than what the game actually was. Lamar Jackson was very uncomfortable, did not play like an MVP, and that's saying something because he had 300 passing yards and 100 rushing yards in that game. But it did not look like it. If you would have watched Lamar Jackson play, you would have thought he has 150 passing yards and like 30 rushing yards. And you would have said that was a terrible game. But if you just look at the stats, because he's the first player in postseason history with 300-plus passing yards and 100-plus rushing yards in a game. But it just did not seem like he was comfortable. You know, it looked like he wanted to run more than he wanted to throw. He looked like he was very uncomfortable inside the pocket, which the Titans really only rushed 3 or 4 the whole game. They didn't bring all these exotic blitzes because they knew that Lamar Jackson could scramble out of it and also find a Mark Andrews, find a Mark Ingram, you know, find a Snead, find a Marquise Brown. He could find one of his top guys and they would do the rest for him. But no, they only rushed 3 or 4, you know, brought a blitz a couple of times here and there, but it looked like Lamar Jackson was very uncomfortable just sitting in the pocket making his reads. He wanted to run. He was scrambling and he felt phantom pressure. You know, there was nobody rushing him really, and he felt like he was pressured. And then on the Titans side, they just used Derrick Henry to set up play actions. Derrick Henry had 192 yards, which he now has the most rushing yards in the history of a running back in his first 4 games, with 516. The second guy had 512. So he now has the most rushing yards through his first 4 games, and they were using him to get big plays, to set up their play action. I know at one point he had like a 60-yard run. So they were able to use him like they did in the Patriots game, where they just needed to get a 5-yard pass. Derrick Henry would run for the rest of it for the first down. Move the chains. 5-yard run, 6-yard run, 7-yard run by Derrick Henry, 3-4-yard pass. So they used Derrick Henry very strategically against a good Ravens defense who played well the last 12 weeks of the season. They were on a 12-game win streak. You know, they were 2-2. And they finished on a 12-game win streak before that game, before the loss to the Titans. You know, when this happened to Lamar Jackson last year against the Chargers, where he played absolutely terrible, didn't really feel comfortable in the pocket against the Chargers with Bosa coming at him from that end and Ingram with the Chargers and plus that secondary. But he looked just as bad in this Titans game as he did in the Chargers game. And he had a better game in this Titans game. So can we see Lamar Jackson flip that switch in the postseason? Can we see him be that MVP in the postseason that is going to elevate everybody's game? Because it just seemed like the Titans coming off of the Patriots game were still high on that adrenaline. And were like, okay, nobody believes in us again. So let's show them we can do this. And Lamar Jackson these last 2 years has not been able to flip that switch in the postseason after having what was probably the best regular season of a quarterback besides Peyton Manning's MVP season in 2014 and Patrick Mahomes' MVP season of last year. This was probably the third best QB season in the last 7-8 years. So you know he can, you know, elevate his players. He did it the whole regular season, but something happened in the postseason where he was not able to flip that switch. Not able to go, okay guys, I'm going to lead us to victory today. It didn't seem like that. He seemed like he was very uncomfortable, wanted to run first, which, you know, if you have it, use it. You know, he has the mobility of a Michael Vick like he did. He passed Michael Vick for the most rushing yards ever by a quarterback. So if you have the legs to get you a first down, use it, which he did a couple of times. I mean, you don't get 100 yards, 100 plus rushing yards on accident. You know, he used his legs strategically to set up first downs. But in the air, it just seemed like they couldn't get everything in sync. You know, starting at their own 25, I think they got over midfield 5 or 6 times in the game. You know, a lot of the balls that were coming out of Lamar Jackson's hands looked wobbly. They didn't look as crisp as they did in the regular season. Now, don't get me wrong. This is going to be an MVP season. Lamar Jackson is the MVP. There's nothing you can take away from his regular season. He is the MVP. If this was a regular season and postseason award, maybe we're talking about somebody else. Maybe we're talking about Patrick Mahomes. Or maybe we're talking about a Derrick Henry as MVP. I'm sure he'll get some MVP votes. But in the regular season, Lamar Jackson was just a god among men. He was a man among boys. It was Lamar Jackson's league, and everybody else was just living in it. So throughout the regular season, there was no stopping him. Fantasy teams, if you had him, unstoppable. And one of the guys in my fantasy league, you know, came in second place and added Lamar Jackson after week 2. Never looked back. He started 0-4, finished second place in the league. That just tells you how much one person helped change the team. I mean, you're talking about Michael Thomas. Without Michael Thomas, where are the Saints? But this was an MVP season by Lamar Jackson. One of the best seasons we'll ever see by a quarterback, both passing and rushing. I'm not sure if we're going to see it again because teams are now going to start to game plan their defenses around a running style quarterback like a Kyler Murray, like a Patrick Mahomes, you know, like a Cam Newton who likes to get outside the pocket. Not as much anymore because of the injuries. But Lamar Jackson will next year have to find out if he can truly play because defenses are going to gear around a QB spy. Now, granted, he's fast enough to get away from a QB spy, but they're going to rush 3 guys, drop everybody back in coverage, going to have a couple of spies over in the middle. Is he going to be able to make his reads or get the first down if he still needs to with his legs? So he's going to have to definitely step up his game, and we'll see what kind of QB he really will be next year because this is the first year in that newer offense. You know, teams had last year to prepare for him this year, but they didn't know how the offense was going to be again this year. Adding Mark Ingram helped them a lot because it was able to take some of the pressure off of the running numbers, for lack of a better term. Mark Andrews was a big help in the passing game. Marquise Brown, when he was healthy, was a big help in the passing game. So, you know, there was a lot of things that went right this year. And that's what you need for an MVP season. You need a lot of things to go right. Now, can you find a way to make things go right next year? Is going to be the bigger question. So, the Titans game, I don't think was anything more than a fluke as far as how Lamar Jackson and that Ravens team will play going into next year and the year after. But I think there was a couple of serious questions that were raised. One, is Derrick Henry for real? Because we've seen him spark last year late in the season. We saw him spark this year late in the season and in the playoffs. So next year, can he put it for a full year? Not just for the last 5-6 games, but for the full 16. And can Lamar Jackson step it up in the playoffs? And that we're going to have to find out sooner rather than later. But coming up, 2 biggest NFL topics going into this offseason and questions that fans want answered. That's next on the Sports Access. Welcome back. This is Sports Access. So, last 5 minutes here of the show. And there are two very important questions that need to be answered, along with a couple of smaller questions that need to be answered in the NFL this offseason. One, is the Patriots dynasty truly over? Did we truly see the fall of the Patriots? It was that Titans game reminiscent of how, you know, the Warriors dynasty fell, how the Bulls dynasty fell, how, you know, Florida State's dynasty fell going into the early 2000s. Is the dynasty truly over? And if yes, then who is going to be the next great team to come out of this in the next 5 years? Is it the Chiefs? Is it the Ravens? Is it the 49ers? Is it, you know, the Packers? Who is this team that is going to encapsulate a great dynasty, a great 5 years? Who is going to captivate audiences with its just dominance, dominant force, their dominance, their integrity? I have to be careful using integrity with the Patriots because a lot of guys are going to get on me about that. But who's going to captivate audiences into watching football for the next 5 years and saying, that's a dynasty waiting to happen? You know, with the Giants, it was the even years. You knew every even year after 2010, you were like, oh boy, is it the Giants' turn again this year? You know, with the Warriors, it was after 5 years. You know, LeBron and the Heat for 4 years. So what dynasty is going to captivate us again? And another major question is that I think is actually the biggest question because of the speculation and sort of the woe is me attitude of this team and of this city and of this organization is, will the Saints ever be able to make it back to the Super Bowl with Drew Brees? Now, to go on top of that is, does Drew Brees return next year? He's 41 years old, had major, you can kind of call it major surgery. We'll call it major surgery on his thumb to fix the ligament that he tore in week two. Came back, guns a-blazing, had amazing rest of the season. Teddy Bridgewater held it down, which makes me think he's a free agent this year. He can walk. Do the Saints now go with Teddy Bridgewater as their quarterback and let Drew Brees walk? And if Drew Brees doesn't get a contract extension or offer of some sort from the Saints, does he retire? Or does he try to go back to where things started and prove he can win with somebody else in Los Angeles with the Chargers? Does he go back to LA with the Chargers to finish what he started with them and say, hey, just like Tom Brady thinking he can win with anybody else, I'll show you I can win with anybody else. I have Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Austin Eckler, Melvin Gordon if he's still there, Hunter Henry. We'll show you what I can do. So those are the two main questions that we need answered as NFL fans this year. Is the Patriots dynasty really over? And will the Saints ever be able to make it back to the Super Bowl with Drew Brees? Because his last couple of years, especially last year, they were in the NFC Championship game. The year before that, the Minnesota Miracle. You know, this year, I guess you can call it another Minnesota Miracle with the phantom, you know, was it a push-off, was it not a push-off by Kyle Rudolph in the back of the end zone for a touchdown. You know, since 2009, they've had their share of postseason woes. You know, the year after they made it to the Super Bowl, you had Marshawn Lynch in his beast mode game, beating the defending Super Bowl champs. Like I said, last year with the Nicole Hardman, PI, pass interference call, that wasn't called. You also have the year before that, where Marshawn Lattimore thought he was making a play and didn't want to cause a pass interference, but ultimately let Stephon Diggs score that touchdown. You know, the last 3 years, they've all lost in the playoffs. All of the three losses in the playoffs have been walk-offs, have been at the last second, whether it's overtime or whether it is that Minnesota miracle. So that's one of the biggest questions. Also, does Michael Thomas take a step back next year? It's a very real question. It's very real in the sense that he had an amazing year this year. Does he take that step back and get double teamed and have a harder time getting those receptions? Now, nobody can guard Mike, which is his username for Twitter, which is one of the best usernames ever. But it's a very real question. And will Kamara come back to the way he was when Mark Ingram was there? I thought when Mark Ingram left, it was going to be a very big loss for that rushing game, because I thought both of them together were able to feed off each other, both in the passing game and in the running game. You kind of had two different styles of running and two different styles of pass catching out of the backfield that you had to defend as a team, and now you really only have one. So that's going to be another big question. And also, you know, will the Patriots upgrade at the skill position? N'Keal Harry, Julian Edelman are obviously not going to be enough. You have Mohamed Sanu coming back for a full year, so hopefully that, you know, puts him in the mindset of, let me learn this playbook over the offseason, and they turn out great. Now, in the mock draft that we'll talk to you about, or that I'll talk to you about here in the next coming weeks, I do not have the Patriots picking a wide receiver in the first round. I think they can go out and get somebody in the first round, especially if Tom Brady doesn't come back. But I think Tom Brady will be back. As a Patriots fan, I'm hoping he comes back. I don't want to see him. If he doesn't come back, I want to see him retire. I don't want to see him in a different uniform, because it's going to be weird. You know, there's guys that it wasn't weird to see in a different uniform, like Peyton Manning after the first year. It wasn't weird anymore. You know, but I don't want to see Tom Brady in different uniform. I either want him to see him as a Patriot or see him sitting on the couch watching the Patriots with Giselle. So that's one of the other big questions. But in my mock draft, I have them selecting a pass rusher from BYU. I'm not even going to attempt to say his name, because it's utterly ridiculous how hard this name is. It is, Uter Gross Matos from Penn State, not BYU, excuse me, from Penn State. So that'll be another question that needs to be answered. But that is all for today. We'll have a lot more NFL news to talk about. I wanted to go through the five stages of grief for an NFL fan that I kind of just thought of about, but the Odell Beckham story kind of took away from that. But I'll be back on air tomorrow. We will talk a little bit more about NFL, a little bit more about some baseball, about the offseason. Josh Donaldson signed with the Twins. Talk a little bit about that tomorrow. But as always, I am your host, Peter DeFee. It has been great catching up with you guys in Season 2 of the Sports Access. Follow us on Instagram. Now we have an Instagram account. It is Access Sports. Keep you up to date with all the sports going on. Follow us on Twitter at @the_SportsAxis, and follow us wherever you listen to us, wherever you listen to podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher. We're all over the map. But this has been the Sports Access. I'm your host, Peter Defee, and we will see you another day.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello?
Cincinnati.